After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the 16-year-old high school student who railed against Spanish language in his California high school and grew up to become President Trump's top policy advisor on immigration. And as the White House prepares to unveil new aspects of that immigration policy, the story of farmers torn between their support for Trump and their fear that he might deport their workers. It's Monday, February 13th.
We've had hundreds of individuals enter this country through our immigration system on visas who've gone on to do enormous harm to this country from 9/11 through San Bernardino, through the Boston bombing, in Chattanooga, and on and on and on it goes.
This was the weekend that America met Stephen Miller.
The United States of America has a terrorism problem.
A wiry 31-year-old known for his thin black ties and his signature policy subject, immigration.
We have had hundreds of cases of foreign nationals entering our country from other countries and plotting, attempting, or even carrying out terrorist attacks.
On NBC's Meet the Press this Sunday, on ABC's This Week, on CBS's Face the Nation, and on Fox News Sunday, there was Stephen Miller.
And I'm prepared to go on any show, anywhere, anytime, and repeat it and say the President of the United States is correct 100%.
Where did he come from? Where did he get his hard right views on immigration? And how will he influence this presidency?
Hi, Michael. How you doing?
Glenn Thrush covers the White House for the Times. So, Glenn, Stephen Miller is still quite young, but his views go back a few years, and they're incredibly consistent, particularly when it comes to this nationalistic America First mentality that he has. Can you describe Stephen Miller as a 16-year-old kid?
Yeah, I mean, he went to Santa Monica High School. His parents, he has described to friends, were LBJ, JFK, FDR, mainstream Jewish liberal Democrats. And he has told people in his orbit that as he steeped himself in Milton Friedman and all kinds of conservative authors that he was reading as a kid, that he actually converted his parents to conservatism and they became kind of Reagan Democrat.
So what were some of the issues back in high school that Stephen Miller took on as a 16-year-old in Santa Monica?
A lot of identity politics issues in the state of California at that particular point in time. There was a sort of a Hispanic rights surge, and I think he was more a traditionalist in terms of whether or not Mexican holidays should be on the calendar, and in general, kind of the use of political correctness.
I want to read a couple of things that Stephen Miller wrote as a junior in high school. Quote, "There are usually very few, if any, Hispanic students in my honors classes, despite the large number of Hispanic students that attend our school. Even so, pursuant to district policy, all announcements are written in both Spanish and English. By providing a crutch now, we are preventing Spanish speakers from standing on their own." Glenn, can you help me understand why it would be that this 16-year-old from a really liberal community, Santa Monica, came to hold these views on immigrants?
You know, I don't know. And I think it's a curious question. He's been interviewed a lot about this. We talked with a lot of his friends and people that he grew up with. And it appears that he kind of sprang fully formed on this issue. Now, this is not that uncommon, right? When you grow up in an environment that is so overwhelmingly liberal, you know, in a state that is demographically changing, I think he's emblematic of a fair minority of conservatives who grew up in that environment.
So then Stephen Miller goes off to Duke, where he maintains his reputation as a confrontational conservative activist. From college, he went straight to Capitol Hill, starting in the office of Representative Michelle Bachmann, and eventually landing as an aide to the conservative Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions. This is when he first shows up on the radar of congressional staffers and reporters like Glenn in 2013. At the time, Democratic and Republican senators proposed a historic agreement to allow undocumented immigrants to remain legally in the U.S. Miller had other plans.
His goal, his two goals, I would say, were twofold. The first was to kill it dead.
Right.
And the second was to kill the Republican establishment that was selling his party's base, white working class people, out to the quote-unquote globalists.
Miller gets a reputation for flooding people's inboxes with dozens and dozens of bombastic emails about the plan.
He carpet bombed people. There were Republican staffers on the Hill, actually, who set their spam filters to filter out Miller's emails. And very frequently, the subject matter really often settled into one set of arguments, and that was foreign labor is flooding across the border, which is suppressing American wages, which is creating hardship for native-born American workers.
It's around this time, working on a congressional race in Virginia, that Miller attracts the attention of people like Steve Bannon.
That campaign, just as much as Sessions, really brought together a lot of these forces that have currently coordinated within the West Wing. He got to know all the Breitbart folks. So there was this whole stew pot, which at the time when we were covering the House and Senate, seemed to be on the fringes.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, what was going on at this point was the germination of this group of people who were really tapping into something which would later become the Trump movement.
By the time Donald Trump decided to run for president, Miller is not just on board. He's considered political family.
And then really in the middle of 2016, he became Donald Trump's principal speechwriter. At around that time, in midsummer, when Trump moved from handwritten notes at his rallies to the teleprompter.
Which was a big moment, I remember it.
It was a huge moment for Trump, yeah.
In just a short time...
So speaking of voice...
You will be hearing from the man who is going to save the United States of America.
During the campaign, Stephen Miller came to have this second role in the giant rallies that Trump held that galvanized so many Americans.
How many children are dead because of our sanctuary cities?
And in watching these...
How many moms are grieving because of our sanctuary cities?
It feels like Miller is at his most intense and impassioned when he's talking about immigration.
Giving your jobs to illegal immigrants, giving your tax dollars to illegal immigrants, putting your children at risk... Build that wall!
So Glenn, Miller's now turning to the next phase of the Trump White House's America First agenda, and it's a still secret set of restrictions on immigrant workers. What do you know about the plan?
We don't know a ton about that, but this is something I kind of came across, is the fact that Mr. Miller has now turned his attention to the issue he personally cares most about, which is guest worker visas. And I think what he's looking to do is write some formulation that restricts it as much as possible without causing the same kind of harm that the previous order did.
So, Glenn, I have kind of a thesis for you based on everything you've told me in our conversation here and what we've seen. Are the hardline views of 16-year-old Stephen Miller, which he came to for whatever personal reasons, essentially now the White House's position on immigration?
You know, that's a really great question. You know, again, I can't get into where his head was at when he was in high school, but I can tell you that in general, this notion of economic nationalism, of America First, is really the dominant ideology in the White House. But here's a wild card, man. Stephen Miller may have the president's ear right now, but this is a president who has shown a capacity to move in directions that he wants to move in. So I think the question... it's better framed this way. Stephen Miller at 31 may very much be where Stephen Miller was at 16. Is Donald Trump going to stay there?
At 10:41 a.m. on Sunday, after Stephen Miller's round of TV appearances, Mr. Trump offered a clue. "Congratulations, Stephen Miller," he tweeted, "on representing me on the various Sunday morning shows. Great job." We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made, and then painstakingly to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the situation room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Donald Trump promised on the campaign trail to create a deportation force that would find undocumented immigrants living in the U.S.
Are you going to have a massive deportation force?
You're going to have a deportation force.
And we've learned that for the most part, he's doing what he said he'd do when it comes to immigration.
People come up to me, they say, Donald, you don't really mean we're going to build a wall, do you? And I say, absolutely we're going to build a wall, 100%.
For many of President Trump's supporters, the fact that he is following through with his campaign promises is thrilling. But in the Central Valley of California, it is some of Trump's supporters who are most dreading the possibility that he will keep his word about undocumented workers. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi.
Caitlin Dickerson is a national reporter for The Times. Can you evoke the Central Valley of California for me?
So the valley is this stretch of lowlands. It goes from Sacramento down to Bakersfield, and it's a place where farms and dairies are really interwoven with the community. So outside schools, you know, schools are surrounded by almond orchards. You're driving down the street, and one moment you're looking at the grocery store, and the next you're looking at a field full of cows. So they're really inextricable, and in the same way, immigrants and also undocumented immigrants are totally part of the fabric of these communities. You know, they're the vast majority of the workforce on these farms and dairies. Some estimates say 70%, but others, you know, when I spoke to farmers, they said, let's be real, it's really more like 100%. And it's this place that, you know, for decades has had a paradoxical relationship with its conservative values and then its reliance on people who aren't authorized to be here.
So you talk to a lot of these farmers. One in particular really embodies all the tensions you're describing.
So when I was in the Central Valley, I met a farmer named Jeff Marchini. He's Italian, and his family's been farming in La Grande for four generations. They have a pretty big operation now, and they primarily grow radicchio, which is this kind of hard, rough vegetable that I find delicious. But they grow a lot of other leafy vegetables and salads, and they export them all over the world. Actually, they send a lot to Korea and Japan.
What is he like?
He's an interesting guy. I mean, he's thought a lot about politics and he identifies with Donald Trump really strongly. But at the same time, he doesn't want Trump to deport his undocumented workers. And in fact, he'd like for them to become citizens. So it's kind of this unheard of ideology in the Republican Party, but it exists in large numbers in the Central Valley. So he's really the only person that can quite explain it perfectly.
Oh, here we go.
Hello.
Hey, it's Michael. How are you?
Hey, Michael.
I just want to start because I feel like I want to fully get my arms around the migrant workers who work for you. I want to get a feel for your relationship with them, how close you've gotten with them over the years.
Grew up on a farm. I worked side beside them all my life. So that's at a very young age. I was working beside them. So I get the utmost respect for our employees, because typically we're working in difficult conditions. Hours can be long depending on the season. And I think you'll find that most employers, you know, definitely we can't get the job done without great employees.
So I want to talk about politics for just a minute. You supported Donald Trump in the election.
Yeah, I voted for Donald Trump, yes.
And why did you do that?
Well, you know, I like that. Spent his entire life building businesses and creating businesses. He's focused on the bottom line, and I think that's needed in this country.
So now that he's president and he's beginning to put immigration policy into place, how would his proposals affect you, and what do you think of them?
Well, I think, you know, I have some uneasinesses on what's occurring. You know, I'm still very optimistic that we are heading in the right direction. I'm not going to say there's not some anxiety that comes along, but you know, when I see him essentially filling his commitment, building a wall on the border and suggesting he's going to put more ICE officers in the field and potentially doing more documentation checks, that worries me because I need a steady, strong labor supply. So,
do you worry that he could ultimately deport some of your workers and force them out of the country?
I mean, that, you know, it could very well happen. I don't believe it's going to happen. I believe he understands the importance of migrant labor to California and California agriculture. So I don't believe so, but only time will tell.
When he was campaigning, and I'm sure you remember this, he talked about his immigration policies all the time and talked about how he felt about illegal or undocumented workers and about all immigrants. So
I did not care for it, but a lot of these individuals who are running for public office, they say a lot of different things. Okay, so
you didn't believe that he would necessarily do it.
No, I didn't say I don't believe he would necessarily do it. The extremeness of Trump, we know he can be extreme and he can just speak off the cuff. Is he going to deport those bad individuals that aren't following the laws of the country? I hope so. I really do hope so. But we need, you know, there's a shortage of labor. So we don't need to deport those people that are currently working here and contributing and who are following laws are just here to work hard, raise their families, and live the American dream.
It sounds to me like you're torn between very deep frustrations with the political system and the immigration system, but you're also, on the other side, torn by your own business and by workers you really care about. And it feels like it's a pretty difficult position to be in.
Yeah, I would say yeah.
Would you say that your views are shared by a lot of your fellow farmers?
I would say yeah. It doesn't matter if it's trade or it's labor. I think no matter who voted for whom, there's some anxieties going out there. What is going to really happen? You know, I'm in the beef industry or I'm in the almond industry and we rely on exports and he's ripping up every trade agreement and then the labor portion of it. So I think agriculture in particular, there's, you know, a little uneasiness of what's going on.
So that's how the farmers feel. In her reporting, Caitlin Dickerson also spoke with the workers. What did the migrant workers have to say about their fears? And if it comes to this, do they think that the Marquinis of the world, the farmers, their bosses, are going to protect them?
I think they do. And I think the farmers are telling their staff that they're going to do everything that they can to protect them. Farm workers are certainly nervous. They say that they're nervous. They all know a lot about Donald Trump and they listen to and read his speeches. But at the same time, in the Valley, they feel safety in numbers. I mean, they would say to me, look around. We are everywhere. How are they going to get rid of us? How are they going to do it? And so I think they're finding some security in, at least to their eye, it seems logistically impossible to get rid of all of them.
What do we know about what Donald Trump's plans are, such as it's ever possible to know his plans for dealing with migrant laborers like the workers we just heard about?
We don't know a lot, and he has a really big decision in front of him. I mean, we know that, and the farmers are heartened by the fact that growers' associations that they belong to, these are trade associations, they're talking to Donald Trump, and so farmers are really heartened because they think that means their message is getting through to the president and that he's going to at least allow migrant labor who work on farms to stay in the country, perhaps give farmers an exception. But at the same time, those growers' associations are up against another really strong ideology in the White House, and that's coming from people like Stephen Miller, an ideology of Jeff Sessions, who's now the attorney general, which is that both illegal and legal labor hurt the U.S. economy, that the more immigrants we rely on, the more Americans who are going to be out of jobs. You know, they believe that American business owners and in particular farmers are really addicted to cheap immigrant labor, and that's keeping Americans out of jobs. And so they think, you know, if we deport both legal and illegal immigrants, wages will increase, and that will bring Americans back into jobs traditionally done by immigrants, including working in the field. And so Donald Trump has these two competing ideas that he's trying to weigh right now and make a decision.
And as heartening as the industry groups' conversations may be, there's only one of those groups that's in the White House, and it's the side that favors deportations.
Deportation. And when we look at the executive orders that have come down so far, they definitely speak more to that ideology. There's no telling whether that will change. But for the moment, it's looking like deportation is more likely than not.
Thank you, Caitlin.
Anytime.
Here's what else you need to know today. North Korea launched a ballistic missile in what seemed like a deliberate attempt to test the resolve of President Trump, who has warned against such provocations. But afterward, Trump never mentioned the country while pledging his support for a Korean neighbor, Japan. The president spent his weekend at Mar-a-Lago, which he's now calling the Winter White House, golfing with Japanese Prime Minister Abe. As a private citizen, Trump used to criticize President Obama's fondness for golf. But with two trips this month to his Florida golf clubs, Trump appears to have reversed his thinking. Finally, in the friendly showdown between Adele and Beyoncé at last night's Grammy Awards, Adele won out with her single, Hello. She won for Best Album, Record, and Song.
Tonight winning this kind of feels full circle.
But she said she couldn't possibly accept the award for Album of the Year.
And I'm very humbled and I'm very grateful and gracious, but my artist of my life is Beyoncé, and this album for me, the Lemonade album, was just so monumental.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet, to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal you, but I ain't done much healing. Hello.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.